SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
This is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 19th of November, 2024. The Australian share market rose, hitting a fresh record today. We'll have the details with Raymond Chan from Morgans, including a look at the Trump trade and expectations of more Chinese stimulus. But first, facial recognition technology sees the collection of a digital image of an individual's face and the extraction of their distinct features into a biometric template. If it's used for identification purposes, it's considered sensitive information under the Privacy Act. Well, the Privacy Commissioner has found that through its CCTV system, Bunnings captured the faces of every person, likely hundreds and thousands, in 63 stores in Victoria and New South Wales between November 2018 and November 2021 without their consent, and had failed to take reasonable steps to notify individuals about that collection. Bunnings, though, has argued its use was to protect stakeholders like staff and customers from violent, aggressive behaviour and criminal conduct, adding that some 70% of incidents are caused by the same group of people. And Bunnings says customer privacy was not at risk, and unless matched with a database of known people of concern, the electronic information of the majority of customers was processed and deleted almost immediately. It is seeking a review of the determination before the Administrative Review Tribunal. So, what does this all mean, and what does it mean for other businesses? For that, I spoke with Margarita Vladimirova, a graduate researcher at the Deakin Law School. Margarita, first of all, what exactly is facial recognition technology and why would a business want to use it?
So facial recognition technology, it is a technology that allows to compare biometric facial templates of an individual who, for example, walks in the store with a database of existing templates that were collected before. So usually a company who using such technology, they collect these facial templates and they store it. And then they compare facial images of people who walk into the store with facial images that they already have in their database. And very often those databases, they have certain tags. So they assess everyone and they assign certain tags to people. They say, for example, this particular person is a repetitive offender. He was stealing from us, and we know that this tag is theft. We know that this particular person did involve in some aggressive behavior, so we know that this person is aggressive. And for example, in the case that we discuss in the case of Bunnings, if this system will receive such a tag popping up in the system, they will give a signal to the workers and they will try, for example, to escort these people outside of their facilities or ask them to leave the store.
Okay, I know in this instance, for example, Bunnings would say that of the majority of people, it only processes and stores the information for less than 1 second, for example. But in general terms, facial recognition technology, to what extent is it legal?
It is legal. Entities can collect and manage and store your facial information, but only with consent of an individual. So the tricky part here is that the Privacy Act 1988 that regulates the facial recognition use, it does say that facial information is sensitive information, and this kind of information, it should be collected only with consent of an individual. However, the legislation doesn't say what kind of consent. And there are two kinds of consents, implied or explicit. And very often entities can say, hey, there was a little piece of paper in the corner of the window that said that if you're walking in on our facilities, you agree with the use of CCTV cameras. And that means that implied consent is received. However, the practice shows and the APPG, the Australian Privacy Guidelines, suggests that the consent should be explicit. So the entity should specifically ask people if they agree for the information to be collected, and people should agree. They should specifically say, yes, it's okay if you collect my facial information.
How can it breach a person's privacy? In other words, to what extent should consumers be worried about this?
So the tricky part is that Australia doesn't have the privacy right per se. We only have the Privacy Act that contains privacy principles. And if those principles are very carefully crafted, those principles violated, then we can talk about the breach of law, then we can talk about the violation of law. And again, that becomes this play of whether consent was received, whether it was not received. So in this particular case, we can say that, of course, it is not a proper practice. We can see that those loopholes, they've been, of course, misused. And our right to keep our sensitive personal information to ourselves and have a right to know and rule where our information appears, it was violated.
Do you have any idea of just how widely used facial recognition technology is in Australia?
It is very widely used. So we're both talking about the public and private areas. In public, of course, government uses it on multiple occasions, and we know a lot of cases when police used it, and sometimes it was disclosed months later after we found out that it was used. Private entities use it very often, and again, sometimes we are not aware of it. So we talk about, as in this investigation that started it, investigation by choice, it was Bunnings and Kmart. Then we know that Woolworths and Coles, they use CCTV cameras as well. However, they state that they do not use facial recognition technologies. But again, that's a question for definitions and how OAIC will look at it.
So finally, what can consumers do about it? Because as we know, cameras are everywhere. And what about the right of the business to, as Bunnings says, protect their stakeholders, customers, workers, delivery drivers, that sort of thing?
So here, the main advice to us as consumers could be is just be aware. So if you know that this particular place collects facial information, you might want to maybe even wear a mask if you don't want them to have your facial information, to collect your facial information. The other thing is be mindful of where you use your facial information, because a lot of people use it for their phones. So if you use it too often to access your financial apps, your banking apps, and you know that your facial information was recorded in multiple areas as well, so you need to think about the risks. You need to think who potentially could break into those databases, collect your facial information, and is it possible that they further will break into your phone and use it to unlock your bank apps, for example? So it's a very intricate process. It's a very long way of thought. But just be aware that your information is recorded in various retail stores and it's almost everywhere you go. And for now, there is no really any way to protect yourself from it. So it's all up to Information Commissioner's Office, how they will further regulate these practices and how they will try to protect our interests.
It sounds a little bit alarming. That one comment you said about how, you know, the collection of facial biometrics basically could give someone access to financial statements or financial accounts, right? How real is that?
It depends how far, I assume, the criminals would like to go, because it's very widely known, all these programs now, where you can just feed them one photo or two photo of an individual, and it will create a 3D avatar. So the potential of someone to use your facial information to create a 3D avatar and then pretend to be you on a Zoom call or on a some other business call with your partners, I think it's pretty high. We haven't heard of such cases yet, but we heard of case when somebody's voice was misrepresented and money were stolen from business.
That is Margarita Vladimir over there from the Deakin Law School.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
Another milestone reach on the Australian share market today. The S&P ASX 200 breaching 8,400 points for the very first time. That's an intraday high, but then fell back down to 8,374. However, that is a 0.9% increase on yesterday. With the details, I spoke with Raymond Chan from Morgans.
The market up on a number of factors, but I can summarise it in three key factors. One is we have a commodity price rally last night. We see high oil and gold price that certainly benefit the resources stocks. And unusually, we have a quite high number of companies coming out with encouraging update or confirmation today. And number three, we have a improving IPO market. That has seems to be a missing part on the ongoing market rally. So all these three things happening today that attribute to the higher market.
Before we drill down into the market's moves today, I want to focus on some macro type issues. A lot of focus on the way Donald Trump will impact the markets once he takes the presidency. What do you think?
Donald Trump made a lot of pre-election promise, and certainly generally the consensus believe those policy or proposal, if it become effective, it will be inflationary. There's a number of points that he raised. Number one, of course, is trade tariff. Trump proposed a significant trade tariff, that including a 10 to 20% blanket tariff for all the imports, and a 60% tariff on Chinese goods. If putting all in places, this tariff could increase the cost of US business that rely on the import, and many of these costs will pass on to the US consumer. So very inflationary. The number two point, of course, he talked about further cuts in tax. While the proposed corporate and personal tax cut could stimulate the business and consumer spending, however, that will also increase, reduce the federal tax revenue and increase the government deficit. Number three, which is very topical over the past few days, is the nomination of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as the next Secretary of Health and Human Services under the Trump administration. The market concern, of course, is RFK, a vocal critic for the U.S. child vaccination program and the leader of the Make America Healthy Again movement, could potentially influence the vaccine demand and also recommendation. However, of course, you know, RFK came out and say, you know, they just, you know, want the public to be more aware of the impact of the vaccine. However, this uncertainty already hurting a lot of global healthcare companies like CSL Down Under here over the past few days. And number four, Trump repeatedly talked about deregulation. That I think in some way is a good news for investment bank, because usually what it comes with deregulation is a lot of M&A activities. And in Australia, we have Macquarie Bank being a global bank that likely to benefit from that. And of course, he also, number five, Trump talked about more strict immigration policy that will have the unintended consequences to put upward pressure on the wages. And finally, number six, Trump repeatedly talked about his view on the energy policy, moving more toward the fossil fuel industry and moving away from the clean energy. That, of course, in some way benefit our energy stocks over here, like Woodside. However, that would certainly delay the long-term progress for the clean energy adoption. But Having all that, put that all that into consideration, the reality is more complex. Obviously, it would take time, if all these policies are being put in place, the likely outcome will be a delay in the Federal Reserve rate cutting cycle. So people will see high interest rate for longer. However, the reality of life is all these policy will require a lot of compromise and negotiation. So how many of that policy become law is yet to be known. Number two is on the Trump tariff policy. If we read into some of the people supporting Trump, I can't help and think, some of the Trump tariff policy or proposal is a negotiation tools. It's a way where, the game theory approach to seek leverage to trade negotiation with the US trading partners. It is important to note that at the moment, there's about 132 countries currently imposing higher tariff on US product than the US does on theirs. So I think, Trump just want a level playing field. All these tariffs may not be as bad as it's turned out. And finally, in terms of implication, Trump is just one factor among many, many others. And we have other moving parts in the economy at the moment. Number one is the Federal Reserve. So a few days after the Trump election or Trump victory, Federal Reserve offered cut the interest rate by another 25 basis point. And we have another Federal Reserve FOMC meeting in December. And the chances is still a bit over 50% for another rate cut. What we're seeing is the US employment growth is now falling below the historical average. As such, we can still see Federal Reserve will continue to cut rate. Another moving part, of course, is China. They're going through their stimulus at the moment. Yes, the media suggests the stimulus is a bit low. Lower than the expectation. However, we should expect more to come in near term.
One of those other key issues you mentioned briefly was China, right? So the potential for import tariffs of as much as 60% will show just how the threats to the global economy if we do see a slowdown in China's economy. China's economy is already slow. It's trying to stimulate it. There's been a raft of measures coming through over the past few months, more just recently too. What are you seeing about the stimulus measures? Are they enough coming out of China?
Very good question. First of all, we consider Chinese government policy shift to stimulate the economy as highly significant. This is a pivot. So with a clear focus now to fighting the deflation and to work on reflating economic growth. In China, of course, the most important thing is the property market. The property market play a critical role in this effort as it's underpinned the confidence, the consumption, and investment. It's interesting to see after the stimulus initial announcement or talk, it's still early days, but we start to see some positive trend in property transaction in tier one city in China. So this is the firsthand evidence that we are seeing. Yes, lately, the media report or media suggest that the Chinese stimulus about 2 weeks ago wasn't enough. It slowed the market expectation. However, remember, in about mid-December, there's another meeting in China. We call it the Central Economic Work Conference. This December meeting may be a more appropriate time for China to respond and to provide more stimulus measure. And also, we don't think it will just stop there. Importantly, I think, for the next year or so, that we're likely to hear more policy, more concrete plan, more stimulus to achieve the reflating of the economy.
That's Raymond Chan there. I also asked him about the direction for RBA interest rates following the RBA's monthly board meeting minutes, which were released today.
I would like to compare, the RBA cycle with the Federal Reserve cycle. They run in a very different cycle. If we look at the history, we focus on the employment growth. In US, the employment growth at the moment is below the historical average, so the Federal Reserve can cut rate. RBA is running in a different cycle. Our employment growth is actually still higher than the historical average. With that, I think RBA, along the line, they say the economy is still facing a strong demand outpacing the supply. The strong labor market, partly because of the stage three tax cut, certainly make it harder for Reserve Bank to cut interest rate at the moment. So unless we see a sudden downturn in the labor market, we probably will see a delay in terms of the first rate cut decision from RBA. Timing wise, the market is sort of pushing to middle of 2025. However, RBA on another note did talk about some expectation. RBA expect the rate to gone down from the current level to around 3.5% in 2026. So not next year, but the year after.
Very quickly, looking at the markets, any company news you're keeping an eye on?
I think Sonic Healthcare looks very interesting. Certainly, the share price has gone up, but we need to understand where it's coming from. Sonic is a global medical diagnostic company that's specializing in pathology and radiologists. In Sydney, of course, we will see the Douglas Hanly Moore as one of the company owned by Sonic. The company grew through industry consolidation, not only in Australia, but also globally. And during the pandemic, obviously, Sonic have scaled up their operation to meet the testing demand. That's why, in the post-COVID environment, the company took time to resizing the business. And that resizing took about 2 years. That's why early this year, they have a result that was below expectation because of the downsizing of the cost. Why today's AGM is important? Because today the company reaffirmed the guidance and they say there will be revenue growth and there will be profit growth. And all these are on track to meet the consensus expectation. And importantly, after 2 years of shrinking margin, the company Sonic start to see margin expansion again. This is a very good news. And also I talked about a moment earlier, Sonic was in the process of right-sizing the business. Today, they talk about the right-sizing is near completion. So this is a good news. I think Sonic is a quality company and should do well in the recovery.
And finally, any opportunities for investors right now?
I think for investors, we have to look beyond the Australian market. I think globally, there's a significant market opportunity happening at the moment. Just a bit of comparison. If we look at the S&P 500, the consensus is looking for 13 to 15% earning growth for the next 2 years. However, in Australia, we're only looking at about 6% earning growth. So remember, the share price will follow the earnings. As such, we should be mindful that we continue to diversify into international opportunity, and there's certainly a number of investment opportunity in the global market.
That's Raymond Chan there from Morgans.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.